This episode of Camp Nightmare is brought to you by Wonder Book and Video.
Go to wonderbk.com today.
Future Fantascope and the Nerd Camp Network present Camp Nightmare, a podcast for happy campers. There'll be fun, fiends, and ghosts, maybe even a few murders. And of course, you're all invited.
Happy October!
Yo!
How you campers doing? I'm Jordan.
I am JB. Welcome back to Camp Night.
Today, we are continuing our celebration of the month of Halloween.
It's a celebration, bitches.
By talking about haunting movies. We're gonna sort of let spooky ghosts guide us through the rest of this month.
That's sort of our theme for this month, spooky ghosts.
And we love going back to our movie curated lists. But we didn't want to do another Halloween movie list, so we're doing ghosts. Gothic haunting movies today, and we got a collection of some really good ones, some choice modern ones, too.
Yeah, there's one in particular that's expanding the Western horror genre.
It is.
And I dig it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right.
But before we get into any of those,
let's get into some motherfucking what's new.
First, VHS 86. Mm. It is coming. Whether you like it or not, it's happening. Mm. So the VHS movies, they haven't exactly gotten better over time.
I don't know if you can hear all my old man grunts in the background.
They had some news this time that got me a little bit excited. So the VHS is going back to one of the filmmakers that made it great to begin with.
David Bruckner.
To improve one of the parts of these movies that I think has gotten progressively worse over the years, which is the overarching wraparound story. In fact, the last movie, I thought there were some standout spots, but the overarching wraparound was so bad, it just brought everything down like a full letter grade to me. But David Bruckner is one of my favorite people making modern horror to me. Like, I loved his Hellraiser version.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with The Ritual. I think that was great.
Yeah.
His early VHS segments were great. He did Creepshow episodes. That was sick.
What segment of VHS did he do?
Amateur Night in the first one. He's in the very first one.
Which one is that?
This is the one where they pick up the girl who turns out to be like a
vampire,
a succubus.
Are you like a succubus? Oh, yeah, it's the very first segment. Okay.
All right. It's one of the standout segments from all that movie.
The VHS 2 is the one that has the weird South Asian death cult, right?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite segments
that
of
one
any
is fucking terrifying.
VHS movie.
That's one of my favorite segments of any anthology movie.
Same
ever.
Here.
It's brilliant.
That VHS 2 also has the Ed Sanchez, Jamie
the
Nash
one
with the zombie bike ride.
My buddy Jamie Nudd did all of the set decorating on that.
Mm.
And she told me she was drunk one time complaining about how annoying it was to have to set everything up back on that trail because it was like way steeper than it looks in the movie.
Oh, sure.
And she just had to like hike up this hill resetting things.
Reset the branches and the guts.
Yep.
For the fifth time.
Yep.
So that's what's coming up. Maybe David Bruckner can inject some life into this next VHS.
I mean,
movie.
I will tell you this. I've read some because it debuted at Fright Fest.
Okay.
And I've read some reviews, and every review I've read said that it's the best VHS since VHS 2. So,
David Bruckner magic. All right, well, I'm
maybe.
Here for it.
In book news, Jordan Peele has curated a book of 19 black horror authors in a new 400-page horror anthology book titled Out There Screaming.
Yes.
Here for it.
Yeah. So we got a great new Jordan Peele release this October. I'm definitely want to pick up this book. It's in hardcover right now. I guess paperback is coming.
I'm sure they're going to drop it on Audible, and that's where I'm going to get it, because I'm just
sure.
on an Audible bender right now.
There you go. Like, Audible's the best, dude. I love it. I drive a shit ton for like what I do with film work and stuff, mm-hmm. so I'm like always Audibling it up.
Yeah.
They need to fucking sponsor it.
I mean, good luck, man. That's like getting that Disney money. Like,
yeah, we ain't getting that.
We're not getting Audible money. Amazon owns them, son.
In that case, fuck Audible.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, of course we're going to read it. Of course we're going to read it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's Jordan Peele. He can do no wrong, as far as I'm concerned.
And I'm sure it's just the deep-cut Stephen King nerd in me, but I just have to wonder if he chose 19 horror authors for a reason.
I'm sure he did.
You know,
I'm sure
I have to believe that Jordan Peele is
knowing
well
that, knowing how much of a nerd
Stephen
he is,
King, yeah.
Like, on top of being like a scary motherfucker and a very talented director, he's also a huge nerd.
Right. And if he's going to like enter into the literary world and he has a nod to 19, I just feel like it might be beyond coincidence. It might be 19.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
So up next, congrats to Toast Beer.
Yes.
For winning our October giveaway, our first October giveaway. I'm going to say there because I'm not sure what gender they are.
Well, it sounds like they are, in fact, a beer. So, I'm assuming we're mailing this to a giant human-sized mug of beer.
So I'm still going to say they.
Yeah, I think we don't want to genderize.
Well, I don't want to gender a beer.
A giant glass filled with brewed liquid.
Right. But yeah, they guessed it immediately. Immediately.
So they're the first to know, and they're going to get some free ones as soon as they drop this month. In fact, we will now announce that these new merch items are, in fact, Camp Nightmare merit badges.
It's our fall merch run, man. It's merit badges. We have been thinking this up and brewing this up in our head for, at least a year.
And there's going to be a series of merit badges. We're going to drop new ones over time, periodically through the year. The first ones we're starting with, we have some Happy Camper merit badges, Cryptozoology merit badges, and Necromancy merit badges.
Yeah.
They are coming in both enamel pens and some glitterized stickers. And pre-orders for those are up on our Patreon right now. And it will be up to the general public and polite society at some point in the next week.
All right. So up next on What's New, tomorrow, October, Friday the 13th, Jordan and I are going to be at the Distorted Dreams Haunt in Fort Ritchie, Maryland. It's near Hagerstown.
Yes. We've been trying to do a haunt thing for a while.
Yeah.
They've invited us there for the Friday the 13th. The spookiest night of the year, and we're going to be hanging out with Nancy Ann Ritter from my movie The Only Ones, but from what everyone else knows her from, is the original Scream movie. She's one of the bathroom girls from Scream. She's going to be there on the 13th and the 14th signing autographs, but more importantly, she's there on the 13th, hanging out with us.
Hanging out with us.
And it's going to be a good time.
And that's the important part. So last up on What's New, I saved this for last because it's just bonkers. It's cuckoo bananas to me. So my partner, my wife, Karen, who is clearly the more rational one between the two of us, clearly the more skeptical one.
Oh, definitely.
A couple weeks ago, we're driving back from somewhere. I think maybe back from dropping Charlie off at daycare in the morning. And she just casually mentions this story about alien abduction to me.
What brought this up? Because alien abduction doesn't just you just don't stumble on that in conversation.
I think
typically.
We were talking about paranormal experiences in general.
Okay,
and she was
sure.
You know, my best friend, have I ever told you the story about the porta potty and the pink light? And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah.
Is this anything like the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe?
No, unfortunately not. So she proceeds to tell me the story. When they were in grad school, they were on a break and they took this epic cross Canada road trip. Like you do when you're in your late 20s.
Like everyone, crossing Canada, as all young people do.
So they're on the glacier in Jasper, Canada, which is far western end of Canada, but north of British Columbia.
Beautiful, beautiful country up there.
It's definitely alien country. Fucking remote.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So they're at this. They're on this glacier and they're driving, and her best friend really had to pee. So they pull over at this porta potty that's on the side of the road. It's a grouping of porta potties. Because in Canada, they're nice, and on real out there country roads, they still have porta potties. So they stop.
That is nice. You never see that in America.
Exactly. So they stop at this porta potty, and her best friend gets out to go use the restroom, and Karen's just waiting in the car, and 15, 20, 30, 45 minutes go by, and her best friend still has not come out. So Karen gets out of the car and bangs on the door a bit, calls her best friend's name, nothing. So now Karen starts panicking.
She waited 45 minutes.
I mean, sometimes people got to go, man. Sometimes, whatever.
Hey, she knows her friend better than we do.
Sure.
Maybe she's this is typical for whoever this is.
Well, so she starts panicking a little bit, but gets back in the car. And, the way she says, she's in my mind, I was I'm sure she'll be out any minute now. And lo and behold, she comes out 2 minutes later. So Karen gets out of the car and she's what the fuck, man? And her best friend's yeah, I know, right. That pink light, the crazy pink light was in there. Did you see that? And Karen was I didn't see any pink light, man. But you've been in there for 45 minutes. And her best friend was no, I was only in there for 30 seconds. And Karen was no, it's been 45. And showed her watch. And her best friend was what the fuck?
So she had lost time.
So she has lost time. And so then she tells Karen about this weird pink light that shone all around the border of the closed porta potty door, color out of space style. And it like mesmerized her best friend for what she thought was a couple minutes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So like Karen finishes casually telling me this story and I'm like, you know that she was abducted by aliens, right? Like 100%.
That's like every checkbox was just checked.
And here's why I genuinely believe that her friend was abducted. Because Karen is incapable of lying. Like she's not good at it. It makes her physically ill. She does not care for it. So I know that she's not just like making a story up. And yeah, the specifics of that are too similar to like other shit that I've read.
So what does Karen believe about all this?
Oh, she believes that she was abducted.
Okay, all right, good.
100%.
All right.
Well, I mean, specifically because when she was banging on that door and like no answer whatsoever, like.
And then she walked out of that very door like, oh, yeah. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
Yeah, dude.
The porta potty and the pink
this
light.
This is why I'm so in love with this woman, man. Like, the longer I stay with her, or the longer I'm with her, not stay with her, the longer I'm with her, the more weird shit like that. Like, remember the highway serial killer registry thing? And I was just like, so you've got bodies on you, clearly.
Yeah, stay with her, man. On your guys' like 50th anniversary, she'll let you into the Illuminati.
Yeah,
like the
exactly.
Top tier, you know what I'm saying? Gotta earn it, though.
So that's what's new. Let's get into this steaming pile of streaming picks. Up first on Peacock. The Skeleton Key. We're going to talk about it a little bit today. I actually love this movie.
I do too.
I think
this
it's
great
really
one.
Brilliant. I think it got shit on because it was part of that awful string of movies in the early 2000s that were rated PG-13.
And totally sucked.
And sucked. This is one that doesn't.
Up on Netflix, you can go check out Crimson Peak.
Yeah, this is one of Guillermo del Toro's. I think this movie is unfairly judged. Like,
I believe I personally unfairly judged it, actually. And like on the second watch, I came out a different person.
I think there's a lot more CGI in this film than people were used to with Guillermo del Toro. And I think that bothered a lot of people.
Yeah, maybe so.
But I think the story is still there. And there's the DNA of Guillermo del Toro is still very much in this film.
I believe so.
Up next on Paramount Plus, Woman in Black. This is another movie that's real divisive, I've noticed. The people either love or fucking hate this movie.
Yeah, which I feel like that's just like the Daniel Radcliffe effect. Like, people just had strong opinions.
I think he's a fine actor.
I think he's a great actor. I think he's made himself a great career after Harry Potter, too. And I think this was actually kind of a strong choice for him in that way. But we'll talk about that all later. Up next on Tubi,
The Wind.
It's the horror western that actually, I wanted to slip this into the horror westerns episode. But I just didn't get around to watching it. But
it's
found its way back around.
And
again.
I was certain watching the trailer that it was Saoirse Ronan
starring
in it. It's not, but that girl looks exactly the girl with the dark
similar.
Hair looks exactly like her.
On Disney Plus, The Haunted Mansion, because I had to include this in a fucking Gothic Hauntings episode if this thing just dropped. It's got Rosaria Dawson and Danny DeVito and like everybody else.
It's fantastic. This is such a great apology for the Eddie Murphy version of this.
Yeah, that movie's so not good.
Nope.
But this one seems to be pretty promising.
Well, and while we're on this tip, like I want to mention a couple of other like honorable mentions that dropped because it's just a lot dropped at once. Pet Sematary Bloodlines dropped on Paramount Plus on the 6th.
Okay.
I have not watched it yet. I'm probably going to watch it tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll watch it.
And Loki Season 2 dropped on Disney Plus the day after Haunted Mansion. So last up, trailer of the week, The Toxic Avenger. This trailer is fan... Like, this has so much Lloyd Kaufman-approved shit in it.
Yeah, this literally looks like what a high-budget trauma movie would be.
Yep.
Like, is this basically the exact beginning of Toxic Avenger 4, Citizen Toxie, where they're like, the Diaper Mafia is taking over the school, and it's a stupid like gang with a terrible name and like a dumb gimmick, and they're like got machine guns, and Toxic Avenger shows up and murders everyone mercilessly.
Well, and it's brilliant because you don't think it's going to be violent, and then he just knocks the bottom of a dude's jaw off with his mop,
rips
and
his
like
face off.
Yeah,
oh,
and like
great.
From there on out, the trailer is just like blood, blood, tits, blood.
And it is just like
it's just great.
A bunch of talking head news people just like you would find in a trauma movie. This looks like a true spiritual successor to Toxic Avenger.
Yeah, and I love that it's Peter Dinklage.
And I think Elijah Wood looks fantastic. And, you know, Kevin Bacon.
I think there's a lot of folks in this movie that grew up on Toxic Avenger.
Oh, yeah.
And when this was announced, I'll bet, or when this was starting to be passed around the scene, I guarantee you the people that are in this were the ones that were like, I want to do that right now.
Please.
Like,
yes.
Like Elijah Wood, for sure that kid grew up on Toxic
Avenger. Elijah Wood is like also kind of like, I feel like, in a position that Daniel Radcliffe was in, because you do some major, major like you know, property like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, and you're kind of just set, you know?
Yeah,
and they have the opportunity to just, like, do weird stuff or, like, follow the stuff that they're interested in.
Well, and I think that maybe Elijah Wood has a little bit clearer of a idea of that than Ratcliffe does, but he's also older.
Well, I think Elijah Wood's more of a genre kid than Radcliffe probably
is. I think Ratcliffe is a theater kid.
Yeah, definitely.
I think he's done a lot of West End theater since Harry Potter, and I think that's sort of more his...
And like art cinema, like Swiss Army Man,
that
stuff like
fantastic.
That. Yeah, right. So like he's able to take chances and do weird stuff like that because he's he's got the freedom to do that.
Who knew that dead bodies and farts, number one, combined
movie.
So well, and yeah, number two could carry. You could build an entire plot on that. Oh my God, it's spooky season 2023, y'all. Can you believe we got here? Considering the fucking existential dumpster fire of the real world that we live in, now comes the fun pretend spooky stuff. The best possible place to get your spooky stuff is Wonder Book and Video.
They are the number one source for your spooky movies, spooky music, and spooky reads.
They have three retail locations, Gaithersburg, Frederick, and Hagerstown. If you can't get to any of those, that's fine. You can go to wonderbk.com and look through their whole online catalog. It is massive. I myself order from it regularly. We are actual customers, and we love them.
So that's Wonder Book and Video. Check them out at wonderbk.com. All right. So before we get to our list of haunting movies, we got to do a Halloween tradition, which is telling a spooky story. And I guess a new tradition that has now become a thing, which is fan fiction written by happy camper Sean, better known now as author Seamus Belial.
Which is a great fucking pen name.
Which is a great name. So Seamus has provided us this year's October fan fiction, which is a story about JB here. And it's inspired by true events. I'll just say that. That's all I'll say. So this is this year's fan fiction. This is Conned.
Raven, you got the booth covered?
Yeah, of course. Where are you headed?
Raven glances up at JB from her phone, the Camp Nightmare Instagram page trying to refresh over the substandard public Wi-Fi.
We've got that panel in like half hour, JB explained. I'm going to get a cigarette and a join in. Jordan, you coming?
Jordan stood, towering next to JB. Sure. Sean, you okay with covering for me?
Of course, man. I'll see you at the panel to set up the camera.
Jordan and JB set off through the throng of horror fanatics towards the hotel's rear exit. Most of the foot traffic was focused on the main entrance, but it was difficult to find any sort of privacy there. Vendors and convention guests snuck out the back when they needed to escape the crowd for a bit. The sun was uncomfortably bright, but the cool air was a welcome change from the clammy atmosphere of the convention hall. Only two other people were finding refuge in the makeshift green room. Jordan recognized the indie comic artist from his stroll around the con earlier in the day. She stamped her finished cigarette beneath the heel of her Doc Martens and thanked Jordan as he held the door for her to go back inside. JB's heart sank a bit when he noticed the other person outside with them. Ted Raimi scowled at JB before taking a drag and turning his back to the podcasters.
Dude, did you piss off Ted Raimi?
Jordan asked in a hushed tone. JB replied just above a whisper.
No, man, I just keep running into him on smoke breaks. I think he thinks I'm stalking him.
Whatever. Jordan dismissed the issue. We're running low on time. Get the joint.
I thought you had one.
JB looked at his friend, a spark of panic in his eyes.
No, man. We were late leaving this morning because you were rolling a joint and it said you needed to make sure we have one ready before the Tahoe Joe panel.
Oh, yeah.
JB pulled a memory from a haze.
I smoked that earlier because I thought you had one, too.
Well, we don't have time to go back to the room. Just smoke your cigarette and I'll see you on stage.
Don't tell me what to do.
JB jested back, but the humor fell flat. Jordan retreated back into the stuffy convention hall, a bit disgruntled, but determined not to let the small inconvenience ruin his mood. JB leaned against the cinder block and cupped his hand around the tip of a cigarette to light it.
Pardon me, are you looking for marijuana?
The voice came from close behind him. Startled, JB jumped a bit as he turned to find Ted Raimi standing uncomfortably close to him.
I don't remember hearing him walk over here. Weird,
JB thought to himself. Before he could continue the question, Ted Raimi continued.
I have some acquaintances that have just gathered to share a marijuana cigarette. I was just about to join them, and I'm sure they wouldn't mind if another person was added to our circle.
Whoa, really? Yeah, man,
JB enthusiastically replied.
That's super cool of you, and hey, I know it seems like I've been...
There's no need to explain, Ted Raimi interjected. It's ancient history, a Kandarian blood curse.
A what?
JB puzzled. Would you like to join my friends and share the marijuana?
Why is he talking so fucking weird?
JB wondered to himself, but the anecdotal appeal of smoking out with Ted Raimi overruled any trepidation he felt.
Yup.
Excellent, Ted Raimi confirmed. Follow me. JB followed Ted Raimi around the side of the convention hall's exterior to an old cellar door. Ted Raimi opened the door and gestured towards the dim, yellowish light at the bottom of the gloomy concrete stairs. After you.
Wait, I've been coming here for years and I've never heard about this cellar,
JB protested. Of course you haven't. Ted Raimi was nonplussed. It's a tightly held secret, privy to only a select few. You're being invited to join horror convention royalty, JB.
Hold on. I don't think I ever told you my name.
After you, Ted Raimi once again motioned towards the foreboding stairwell, just as the sweet smell of the darkest weed snaked its way into JB's nostrils and danced across his synapses. His better judgment crumbling, JB looked towards the dingy yellow light. The light pulsed and morphed to a green and purple miasma. JB's inner dialogue screamed at him.
No! No, JB! Do not go towards the light!
An unseen force pulled him, though. Tendrils of swirling green light crept up the stairs and damp concrete walls like phosphorescent ivy, finding their way up and around his limbs, gently pulling him down the stairs. For a brief moment, he swore he heard Calliope music playing in his head. His body acting as if controlled by an unseen force, JB descended the tenebrous stairwell into the cellar. On reaching the bottom, the psychedelic light pulsed again and faded back into the dirty yellow hue emitted from the lone, hanging bulb. He looked down at his body, and the glowing tendrils of ivy were gone. JB surveyed the small room. Empty, except for three metal folding chairs, each occupied by a smiling clone of Ted Raimi.
Something's wrong. Something's amiss,
he muttered to himself as he turned back up the stairs. But the stairwell was gone, and JB ran face first into the cinder block wall of the cellar. His anxiety spiked, and he turned again to face the trio of creepy Ted Raimis. They now stood between JB and the stairwell, which had relocated to the other side of the cellar, and the rays of sunlight mocked him from where the grimy stairs disappeared from view. Middle Ted Raimi extended his hands towards JB. Pinched between his thumb and forefinger was a freshly lit joint. Wisps of smoke rose from the smoldering cherry, swirled in a miniature cyclone, then swam eel-like through the air towards JB. They infiltrated his nostrils and mouth, finding their way to his lungs. Again, his body acted against the screamed pleading of his brain. He took the joint from middle Ted Raimi, secured it between his lips, and took a deep hit. Even before he had a chance to exhale, the warm numbness of THC washed over him. Reality slowed down. His body felt heavy. A seasoned and regular pot smoker, JB was surprised at how quickly the weed hit him and how abnormally strong it was. He felt absolutely immobile, little more than a sentient statue. He imagined that if the Kyoto brothers' aliens had crossed paths with a Cheech and Chong plot, this is the weed they'd have. Left Ted Raimi stepped forward and donned a Cheshire smile. Boop! He tapped JB's nose. JB, devoid of both balance and motor function, fell backward like a plank. The three Ted Raimis hovered over him, each donning a rictus grin that would chill Batman himself. JB remained still, too stoned to move, frozen in a waking coma. His eyes darted between each Ted Raimi as his heart and mind raced. In unison, each Ted Raimi reached into his pants pocket and produced a box cutter.
Nothing is real, nothing is real, nothing is real,
JB repeated to himself mentally. Instead of using the box cutters on him, each Ted Raimi extended his blade and set to carving up his own face. JB looked on in horror.
Nothing is real, nothing is real, nothing is real,
he continued his inner mantra. As they cut shapes into their faces, the Ted Raimis began laughing maniacally. The Calliope music JB had briefly heard in the back of his mind returned, but now it filled the room at deafening volume. Giggling and guffawing and shrieking with laughter, each Ted Raimi clone carved the same pattern in his face, a diamond over each eye, a triangle over the nose, and a wide crescent extending from one cheek to the other. When the carving was complete, they dug their fingernails into the fresh wounds and peeled away the skin. Blood rushed from the newly exposed fascia, and absent patches of skin made the trio of fake shimps look like... "Fucking clowns? I hate fucking clowns!" JB groaned to himself. The Ted Raimis knelt down next to him, still laughing obnoxiously. Right, Ted Raimi reached back into his pocket and pulled out a canister of white grease paint. He removed the lid and scooped out a healthy glob of makeup. As the hand approached his face, JB closed his eyes tightly. "Nothing is real. Nothing is real. Nothing is real. Nothing is real. Nothing is clowns. Clowns is real." His inner mantra went off the rails. "Clowns is nothing. Clowns can't sleep. Clowns will eat." Right, Ted Raimi smeared the porcelain grease paint across JB's face. "Sleep is real. Clowns will eat. Can't sleep. Clowns will eat me. Can't sleep. Clowns will eat me. Can't sleep. Clowns will be me. Clowns will be me. Clowns will be me. Clowns will be me." JB opened his eyes, hoping it had all been a horrible nightmare or a bad trip. But to his chagrin, the Ted Raimi clowns still hovered over his immobile body. Taking turns, each Ted Raimi clown laid a piece of his own peeled skin, bloody side out, over its place on JB's greasy, bone-white face. As each piece of cursed prosthetic touched him, JB felt an acidic burn as it permanently bonded to him. Tears leaked from the corners of his eyes and mixed with the goopy clown blood. Once their makeover was complete, the Ted Raimi clowns stood back. Middle Ted Raimi made a gesture as if flickering an invisible light switch, and JB's body sprung back to standing position. The Ted Raimi clowns once again brandished their box cutters, this time lifting their shirts and cutting deep gashes into their stomachs. Blood gushed over the torn muscle and fatty tissue, and each Ted Raimi clown reached a hand into his own body cavity and rummaged around. After a short while, each Ted Raimi clown pulled out the object he'd been searching for. Left Ted Raimi clown retrieved his spleen. Middle Ted Raimi clown produced his stomach. And right Ted Raimi clown presented a lung. The Ted Raimi clowns brought the goopy organs to their mouths and blew them up 4 times to their natural size. Pinching the end, each Ted Raimi clown reached back into the bleeding cavern of his torso and yanked out a length of intestine to tie off his macabre balloon. Once tied off, each Ted Raimi clown placed the loose end of his intestine in JB's hand. The sinewy tube fused to his palm, preventing him from letting go. The balloons were released and bobbed morbidly in the air above JB's head. Middle Ted Raimi clown stared JB up and down and cocked his head to the side. Something was missing. The transformation wasn't complete. A brief moment later, he snapped his fingers at the realization of the final piece. Then he dug his fingers into his eye socket and popped the orb free. Pulling it down and into his mouth, he bit the ocular nerve to free the eyeball from its tether. After a small incision from the box cutter, it was perfect. Middle Ted Raimi clown stepped forward and secured the eyeball to the tip of JB's nose. The three Ted Raimi clowns resumed their absurd laughter as they each took 3 big steps backward. There was a short pause before they began erratically running back and forth. Their Three Stooges routine ended with a collision dead center in front of JB. Instead of flailing and falling over one another, though, the three Ted Raimi clowns melded into one another to become one singular Ted Raimi clown. However, the viscera and blood that had covered each of the prior trio had disappeared. The only remaining evidence of the ghastly transformation was the bloody clown face Ted Raimi wore, and, of course, the unbelievably stoned gore clown, JB, still standing, unable to move. The Ted Raimi clown reached to his neckline with both hands, hooked his thumbs under his skin, and peeled off the latex clown mask. "That was enjoyable," Ted Raimi said while turning up the staircase. "Perhaps we'll cross paths again." JB, still a disfigured gore clown, lurched towards the staircase. Calliope music followed him. As he trudged up the concrete steps, the organ balloons bobbed into the daylight. "Well," Gore Clown JB mused, "I hope I'm not too late to enter the cosplay contest."
Uh-huh.
So there it is, man.
So there it is.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Seamus.
I am flattered and also upset. Not upset. It is an upsetting tale.
I love the phrase gore clown.
Gore clown.
Gore clown. Great band name, I feel I feel like. Gore clown.
I'm never going to play music.
Gore goblin would be a decent one. But yeah, so this was, for those who were curious, clown. What inspired this? This exact thing happened word for word, exactly as is at Creature Feature.
Yeah. So we both smoked, Ted Raimi and I.
Yeah.
And that year at Creature Feature, they had like a real specific smoking area, like, which is funny because
that was like coming right out of COVID too.
Yeah. It's funny because it's Pennsylvania and like that's the year that I stayed at the other hotel.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania. As well. Weird, No.
Man. Pennsylvania's weird.
There is one specific smoking area and Ted Raimi and I kept ending up there. Like 5 or 6 times.
And kept like making eye contact.
Yeah, but it was like either he would be almost done his cigarette and I would have just lit mine or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never like we lit our cigarettes at the same time and were like forced into a conversation.
Right. You were like ships in the night.
Yeah, but like the 5th or 6th time I was like, I'm not stalking you. I swear to God. Like I'm just a smoker.
And he's like, I know. Because he was stalking you.
Yep. Who knew that Ted Raimi wanted this?
This
Ted Raimi was about this.
Who knew that he wanted this?
Who knew?
But
guess I should have seen it coming, man. I'm a snack.
I don't know how you didn't see this coming because it happens every day.
I'm a snack for the Raimi boys. So, Ivan, looking at you, know what you did.
So we hope you guys enjoyed this year's wild ass fan fiction. Now let's change gears entirely and talk about some gothic haunting movies. And fair warning, spoiler alerts ahead.
So yeah, like I for on a whim got like went down this deep rabbit hole of like period gothic horror.
It's good stuff. Period horror is wonderful.
Yes, it is. And we're not talking about menstruation period.
Because we could probably do a whole like episode on that as well.
Yeah,
you
well,
know,
watch.
Teeth deserve some dissection.
Gen V, the boys' spinoff show.
Oh.
There's definitely a whole, like, major plot line in that regarding a girl who can manipulate blood, and she finds out when she gets her first period. Anyway.
Well, that's not this.
But that's not this. Period horror. So I like that we changed it to gothic horror because that makes a little bit more sense. And there's at least one movie in this that's not really a period piece, but
true.
It has the vibe of one.
Yeah.
So let's just jump right into it. Up first, from 2001, The Others.
Because we're going to go chronologically today. Yeah. And yes, I know exactly what all you horror fans are thinking. My God, you're starting in 2001 and you're not even going to cover the 70s and 80s. That's right. I don't care. This year, what we're doing, we're getting extra specific. It's post-2000s gothic horror.
Yeah.
And honestly, I myself was skeptical of this in the beginning, looking upon this list. But on watching all of these, they're so much fun. Like, I think I really enjoyed every movie on this list. So I stand by it. So if you got a problem with it, too fucking bad.
And I made this list. So I take that personally.
Yeah. So we're starting with The Others. And this movie's honestly just one of the best movies on this list and just one of the best haunting movies I think ever made, in my opinion.
And I think this is the last venture that Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise had together.
Tom Cruise producer.
He produces it.
Yeah, I always forget that he was a producer on this. But this movie was written and directed by Alejandro Amenábar, who did Regression, While at War. He also composed and conducted all the music for this movie.
That's
so
pretty badass.
It's pretty badass how much Alejandro went in on this fucking movie. But I guess that's probably because he had some of that Tom Cruise money, you know, back in this movie. And honestly, that Tom Cruise money went to work on this movie because this movie is fucking good.
Yeah, and I mean, the plot is actually shockingly simple.
Shockingly simple.
Just Nicole Kidman is a single mom with kids that had to come back to this house because her husband, I think her husband dies in
Her husband, he hasn't come back from war. And Nicole Kidman's character's name is Grace. We got Fiona LaFlanagan, who plays Miss Mills.
She also plays, by the way, that, just to put that in reference, that's Harry Potter's aunt, Petunia. She also plays the crazy witch Fiona on True Blood. But
I haven't seen that. Okay, but yeah, there you go. Alakina Mann is Anne. And James Bentley is Nicholas, one of the greatest, like, creepy, wide-eyed little kids in movies. I'm shocked his name wasn't Billy in this film.
So the basic premise of it is that Nicole Kidman moves into this house with her kids. The house is clearly haunted. Ooh, they see
so creepy.
Apparitions of this like creepy old lady and various other things. And so they conduct a seance, and it turns out they're the ghosts the whole time. And so, like, when I say it's shockingly simple, it is, but it's paced so well.
Yeah.
And that's really what makes this movie is the pacing.
Yeah.
Right? That, like, they give you just the right amount of info at exactly the right time, like, perpetually throughout this film.
Which,
to leave you still shocked at the end.
Yeah. And the evidence is all there. There's this, like, fog that they can't leave the premises.
Yep.
The kids are, like, photosensitive, so they can't be exposed to light, so they have trouble with that. So, like, they're the ones haunting the house with, like, they're constantly closing all the drapes because they don't want the sun to hurt the children. But looking at it from the other side, there's just, like, these people who they can't fucking keep their drapes open to save their lives, you know?
Yeah.
And, man, see, I saw this in theaters, and that old lady and the whole marionette and the, but I am your daughter.
Yep.
You know, that fucking that terrifying. Shit was, like, one of the scariest fucking things yep. I've ever seen
I've
on the
big screen.
I've said
this before, dude. To this day, one of the things that really gets me is when people talk in unnatural voices. When
yeah.
people
oh,
talk
totally.
In voices
yeah,
that, like,
yeah.
especially little...
This is one of the best ones.
Especially little kids talking in adult voices.
In this one, we get an old lady...
Talking in a little girl voice.
Acting and sounding like a little girl.
But I am your daughter.
Which, of course, is at the end, we know is the leader of the seance speaking through the child yep. and, like, trying to have commune from the living side to them. So I think it's one of the interesting and only times I think we see, like, a haunting movie, one from the perspective of the spirits... And see what it's like to be communicated with, you know, and what yeah. it means to haunt. And, like, it put a new definition on, like, what it means to haunt something, right? Because,
right.
you know, they're not doing it because they're like, oh, let's close the drapes because it freaks the living people out. They have no fucking idea that they're even dead or living there. And, of course, the help who shows up and they're like, they know. And they're trying to, like, I guess, guide them in this process. And the ultimate tragedy is the reason she doesn't know. Is because she murdered her children and then blew her brains out.
Yep, yep.
So it's a super dark movie.
And like I said, you know, like we said, it's simple, it's formulaic, but it works, man, and it's fucking great.
Yes.
So up next, 2005's The Skeleton Key. Now, this is the one that's not necessarily a period piece, but it has all the vibes of Gothic horror.
But I would say it's Southern Gothic, right? Which is like yeah. a whole different side of yeah. Gothic. And I think that's kind of what makes Skeleton Key special, because it kind of exists in that Southern Gothic realm.
Yeah. And one of the things about this, so before I get into that, so it's directed by Lane Softly, who directed Hackers and K-Pax, which I've seen both of those. I will literally die on the hill that Hackers is, dude, it's in, like, my top three favorite movies ever, and,
Hackers
like, specifically from the 90s. Like,
K-Pax is a great movie, too. Unfortunate now because it's Kevin Spacey,
yep.
but if you can get past that, fucking great movie.
So it's written by Aaron Kruger, who wrote The Ring movies, Transformer movies, Scream 3, and Top Gun Maverick. So, like, that's a mixed bag.
It's a mixed bag. He's definitely like a Hollywood guy, for
yeah.
sure. You know, like, he's someone you call in for some franchises. I guess this seems like, you know, maybe early Aaron Kruger, like, he was cutting his teeth on some horror films,
well,
or maybe he just wanted to take a break from these franchise things.
Or I could also argue that maybe they thought about franchising this, because, like, there's room in this movie to go forward with other narratives.
You definitely could. And so he clearly writes movies with franchises in mind,
yeah.
you know, because all of the movies, like The Ring, and The Ring, not really so much, but, you know, they did it anyway.
I mean, The Ring was already a franchise in Japan.
True.
I think
facts,
he walked into that
facts.
Knowing full goddamn well he was going to franchise
yeah,
it.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
So this movie stars Kate Hudson, Goldie Hawn's daughter, who you may remember as Penny Lane in Almost Famous, as Caroline. It stars Peter Sarsgaard, who you may remember as the best friend in Garden State.
I love this actor, too. There's something about him that I've always liked.
Oh,
and
he's
I remember-
real... Yeah, he's I, there's yeah, I get
he's
it.
He's got a good quality to this.
He's like a young John Malkovich.
Yeah.
Like, that's who he reminds. Just like real laconic and kind of like very cynical, very nihilist, but also just like real fun to watch.
Yeah, and fun to watch and likable for some yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It stars Gina Rowlands, the incomparable, as Violet, and John Hurt, who, for my money, like, find me a better character actor. Yeah. Like, that's also a seasoned, like, Shakespearean stage actor than John Hurt, and I'll I don't know what I'll do.
And this, you don't even, you can't even fucking figure
You know
that
why?
Out.
Because it can't happen.
And
it's never
John happened. Hurt puts on a fucking clinic in this movie, too, yep. because he basically has no fucking lines. He probably, I could count the lines that he speaks, like, on one hand.
Yep.
And yet he acts the hell out of every scene he's in.
Yeah.
And even has some physical stuntage involved in this movie, which there's a scene in which he crawls out on this rainy balcony and, like, rolls the fuck off and, like, hits the ground and gets hurt real bad. And John Hurt insisted on doing that stunt himself in the movie, and they had to, like, force him not to.
Yeah.
He was like, if Tom Cruise could do it, I could do it. Yeah. And they're like, no, sir.
I played Ollivander. So this movie revolves around, like, good old Southern Gothic haunting. It revolves around voodoo and hoodoo,
mm-hmm.
Which there is a... difference
in
those
there.
Things, and they go into it in this film.
They actually do a pretty good job of, like, succinctly explaining the difference.
Well, one of them is, like, very practical magic. This is how I understand the difference, is that voodoo is very practical magic, ritualistic, very, like, hoodoo is the more insidious, like, casting charms and zombifying people and shit like that.
The difference, I think, between hoodoo and voodoo really is that hoodoo is not a religion.
Yes, hoodoo is just a practice.
Hoodoo is like, yeah, all the magical shit and all that stuff, but voodoo has actual, like, beliefs.
So maybe
and religion
maybe I said that.
It.
Well, maybe I said
and, like,
that.
Voodoo
backward.
Comes more from, like, the original countries, and then hoodoo.
Hoodoo is. I said it backwards. Hoodoo is the more practical.
Yeah.
Like, doing stuff with it version of voodoo, which is the actual religion.
And voodoo has rituals and stuff, too. But and hoodoo was, like, what was more popularized. And, like, there was actually a weird period of American history in which there was a hoodoo drugstore in almost every major city in America. Huh. It all started in New Orleans, of course. There's a place called the Cracker Jack Drugstore that was, like, a normal-ass pharmacy that realized, based on the clientele and the voodoo and the hoodoo presence in their city, that they could expand to a whole new market, and they started selling materials needed in rituals for hoodoo and voodoo, and it became so popular that other hoodoo drugstores opened up across the country.
That's wild.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Like, if you did that nowadays, dude, Florida would execute every one of them.
And, like, we live in Frederick, Maryland, where we've had more than one occult store that has come and gone out of business.
And every time the Christians come out of the woodwork in mass. And
is that what happens?
Yeah, dude. Every time the Christians come out of the woodwork, like, we can't have a cult being sold to the kids.
Yeah.
Well. And they always shut down.
Well, at one point, you know, you could go to down on your corner hoodoo store and get what you needed.
Right.
It's still in New Orleans, you know, stores like that do exist.
Yeah. So Caroline uncovers this narrative about a hoodoo priest and priestess that had figured out how to live forever.
Yes.
By basically transferring their consciousness or their soul to unwitting folks.
And you could basically steal the time that somebody else has left.
Correct. So
And trade bodies. You trade to a new model.
So the catch is the person being possessed has to believe in it entirely for it to work. So they need to keep, so these ghosts need to keep Carolyn there in the house until she truly believes that they can possess her, and then and then she's possessed.
That's the caveat of, like, hoodoo magic, I suppose, is that, like, at least by this movie's definition, it doesn't work on you unless you believe.
Which is actually kind of what I believe about most of that stuff in real life.
Sure,
it only has as much power as you give it.
As you allow it.
Yeah.
And Caroline as a character is interesting because she's a young person and everyone else kind of, like, wants to go party and stuff. But she's, like,
she's
genuinely interested in caring about people. She's working at a hospice and she quits the hospice because they're all fucking money-hungry monsters and they don't give a shit about anybody.
Yeah.
And they're, like, just, like...
Well, they're just trying to bleed dying people.
Exactly.
And keep them alive long enough to pay them out until they can't anymore.
But she sees the opportunity to go to this, like, crazy old house in the bayou and care for this old man and, like, a one-on-one scenario and, like, you know, I guess get some sort of fulfillment. Interesting tidbit. All of the swampland around the mansion in that movie's CGI.
Really?
Yeah, it's not actually in the swamp. It's got basically field.
Huh.
And, like, farmland around it.
Yeah, yeah.
They found the spot, and yeah, all of that is visual effects that's actually providing the swamp. And this movie shows its 2000s-ness a little bit at the end in a way that I totally fucking approve of, in which every 2000s movie has to be a little self-aware, right, of that the fact it's a horror movie. So they make the note because, you know, you gotta make them believe. And the Caroline is the only person who has stayed long enough to believe. And it seems to be because she's white and because white people are just that dumb in horror movies.
Yeah, we've said this before, man. There is nobody willing to cling to real estate to like the nth degree as much as like greedy white people.
And this white person's like, oh, they need me. I got to stay. Right. But the character, the ghost themselves, says a line at the end where like none of the black ones would stay.
Yeah,
so, like,
no,
every
the black ones are like, I'm out.
Every black person they had that had Caroline's job was smart enough to just be like, I'm the fuck out of here. This place is haunted as hell.
Like Jordan mentioned, it's from the early 2000s. That was a terrible time in horror history. We all know that. We don't need to belabor that point.
But there's
this
the
is
occasional
a real
gem.
This is, yeah, and this is one of them. This is a real standout for me.
And this is it's a bleak movie, and the ending is dark, and I think just like there's a lot of things about this movie that make it different than the movies that are coming out around
this
it at
isn't
the same,
the same category for me as Darkness with Anna Paquin.
Sure, yeah.
Where it's a standout, man, and it's not as truly terrifying as Darkness. Like Darkness is genuinely scary. The last 20 minutes of that movie,
yeah, very scary,
is truly scary, or are truly scary. This movie is never at any point very scary, right? It's just kind of creepy. It makes your skin creep a little bit.
It's atmospheric. It's got like a constant sense of
it's
like
spooky.
Dread throughout.
It's you know what it is? Is it's a great early October watch, in my opinion.
Because
it's spooky and it sort of gets your engine primed.
Yeah.
It was for some better scares.
One of my favorites upon rewatching all these movies, I think.
So up next, one of the more divisive movies on this list.
7 years later, 2012, The Woman in Black. Starring Harry Potter himself.
Mr. Daniel Radcliffe.
That's right. This is a British gothic horror film.
And this is the true, like, this is the first, like, real, I'd say, period gothic film on this list.
Yes, this is definitely, like, a period piece. And it is also a modern Hammer movie. So, and what does Hammer do best than a period piece
horror
movie?
Is this Hammer?
This is a Hammer film,
dude. Oh,
that
makes so much fucking sense. I had no idea.
So Hammer kind of came back with... So a few films around the 2000s, Let Me In was one of the early Hammer release. That was the second Hammer release. I can't remember what
the
first Hammer
release. And that's
the
remake of Let the Right One In.
Yeah, and I can't remember what the first Hammer release is, but this is like in the first batch of like half a dozen new Hammer releases.
Okay.
And
that makes
sense.
We talked about this. Okay.
This movie also boasts the biggest opening weekend of any Hammer movie in the history of Hammer films.
I mean, it makes
ever.
Sense. It's got fucking Harry Potter
in it.
It's
got Daniel Radcliffe in it. Yeah, exactly. So, and we got James Watkins directing, who did Eden Lake, which is a fucking great movie.
Terrifying.
He also did some episodes of Black Mirror, and this is based on a novel by Susan Hill with a screenplay by Jane Goldman, who wrote a lot of superhero shit, like Kick-Ass, X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Both of those movies, I will say, stand a slot above. In terms of superheroes, Kick-Ass specifically.
Kick-Ass.
And
First Class. She did First Class as well.
Well, Kick-Ass specifically, I think, is one of the most underrated superhero movies. Because it's not... Kick-Ass 2 is more of a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. Kick-Ass is more of...
It's a character
study that involves superheroes. It's more like Super,
it's darker, too. It's...
The James Gunn movie Super. It's more like that. Mm-hmm. It stars Daniel Radcliffe as Arthur Kipps, and it's his first role after Harry Potter. And you know what, man? Kudos to him for doing the same thing that a lot of former child actors do, is just go hard left.
Right.
Go hard left.
You got to show you can do something different, right?
I would almost argue that the last, like, three Harry Potter films are kind of him going hard left, because he plays Harry very differently in those films than I imagined Harry when reading those books. Mm. Not enough so that I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
But the Harry Potter in those movies is definitely more of an adult than the one in those books.
Okay, yeah.
In my opinion. Have you read the books?
I haven't gotten that far in the books.
Okay. You'll see. Like, maybe not Half-Blood Prince, but definitely by Deathly Hallows, Harry in the books is nowhere near as much of an adult as he is in those movies.
Interesting. Because it does get dark in those movies, the way he plays
them.
For sure,
but he still attacks shit the way, like, a 17-year-old would.
He's more, like, heroic, I guess, like, sure of himself.
Harry and Hermione and Ron are, like, in their late 20s in the Deathly Hallows films.
That's true. But, like, you know, on the surface, it doesn't look like he's taken hard left, because it's the same kind of period piece look of the Harry Potter Hogwarts look.
Sure.
He's like, in the first 10 minutes, he's at yet another like steam engine train station. And I'm like, this looks a lot like Harry Potter.
I think it's more the character he's playing is such a hard left from Harry.
Well, it's a broken character, yes. But also, I think, like, just being a horror film and the the overall content of this movie. Like, if you're looking at somebody who's, like, metaphorically killing this, like, child-friendly
it's
actor.
It's definitely a cocoon phase for
him. Like, this is literally a film about killing children. So it's, like, metaphorically, like, being like, hey, this is that was me before. That's dead. And this is a new career for Daniel Radcliffe.
Well, and on that tip, this movie literally opens with child suicide. And it's not explicit. Like, you don't see the girls hit the ground or anything, but you definitely watch two twins jump out a window and then hear a whole bunch of people screaming.
And I mean, like, I think I may be wrong, but I'm pretty certain every victim in this movie is a child. It's like explicitly
that's the whole point of
a child murder
woman
movie.
In black. Like, yeah. Like it just for
besides
this
her,
for
I
this
guess.
Period in horror, that's a real bold move, right? Yeah. And I guarantee you that move garnered a PG-13 more than anything else. Like with like, I guarantee you the ratings board read that first scene and was like, well, PG-13 at least.
I'm surprised it didn't go over into R. And I know they must have like they toted that line.
I think they probably toned it back.
Yeah.
So they didn't catch an R rating because that was again the end of that period where horror studios were really trying to get as many people into the theater seats as they could. So they intentionally tone shit back or
well, especially like
back.
Knowing like you know they're self-aware of all this stuff so they know they have Daniel Radcliffe they know it's fresh off the Harry Potter movies so they know if they can get a PG-13 rating everyone's going to see this movie and of course they were right it did really well for them
yeah
but like at the same time they wanted to tell a very dark story
yeah
so they got to tote the line between a movie that does nothing but kill like every child in sight yeah. and like they can't, obviously you can't swear at that point very much. You can't show any nudity. You can't do any of that
well,
stuff that'll
not,
potentially
you
make
know,
it R.
Brilliantly, it's set in a time period where swearing really wasn't what it is now, especially not in the run of society that he exists.
Right.
So the whole premise of this movie is that Kipps is a lawyer or a solicitor was what they'd call them. Mm-hmm. The same thing that Jonathan Harker is. Mm-hmm. So the idea of being a lawyer and a realtor were kind of the same thing back then. Mm-hmm. And there was a specific type of lawyer that handled real estate and that handle the transfer of real estate. So he's assigned to this house that like can't keep an owner to save its life. Mm-hmm. And it's because there's a ghost in it that is killing every child that stays in this house.
Yep.
So of course his go-to move is to move his two children who just lost their mom to like tuberculosis or something like that into this house.
What could go wrong?
Right. Exactly.
The answer is everything.
And listen, in that regard, like I understand people that don't like this movie because it is extremely formulaic, and it is it is extremely all the right moves kind of thing, like for a studio horror. What makes it for me is, I'll use your word, how atmospheric it is, mm-hmm. how well that's handled. Like the visual atmosphere in this film is very like you're in the English moors.
Well,
right?
I feel like that's Hammer. Like, that's Hammer kind of, like, showing off, like, what they have done best for decades,
well,
right?
And it reminds me a lot of, like, Henry James, Wuthering Heights. Charlotte Bronte, I think, wrote that. Wolfman. It's got hard Wolfman vibes in terms of, like, just the foggy settings on the moors.
I mean, the Christopher
dude,
Lee
the
Draculas.
Scenes, the scenes where he gets lost, because this manse that he moves into exists in a part of England where, like, when tide is high, like, you can't even get there because the road to it is covered.
Oh, the setting is incredible for this
movie. Those scenes where he gets lost in the fog on the beach mm-hmm. are fucking, like, nothing bad even happens. It's just so unnerving.
And just the settings in the background, is just that I think that really does give it an extra boost. It's just, I haven't seen really films that looked like this.
Well, and again, this is at the very end tale of the dark period in horror that we don't like to talk about. So this is clearly like, you know, trying to kind of break out of that. And I would call this like a cocoon film for Radcliffe, right?
Because
I think maybe this kind of cemented for him that no matter what he did after playing Harry Potter, it was never going to measure up to Harry Potter. Because he starts doing a lot more movies like indie shit, like Horns, and that weird one where he plays an FBI agent that becomes a neo-Nazi.
Oh, yeah.
And
Horns is a
Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, he was cocooning so he could emerge as the Swiss Army Man later.
Yeah. And so, I appreciate that.
I do, too. And I like this movie. I think it's a great atmospheric holiday watch. So check out that one. Up next on the list, The Wind from 2018.
Such a great movie.
This is a horror western haunting movie, kind of a demon movie, but either way, it's on the list.
Yeah.
It's very vague about what's being haunted, and that's why I think it belongs.
Well, and
in
what's
the
interesting,
list.
And I'll wait and say what I want to say towards the end of it, towards the end of talking about this. But so it's directed by Emma Tammy. She did two entries of Hulu's Into the Dark, Blumhouse and Hulu's Into the Dark, Blood Moon and Delivered. Neither of them are good. I will tell you that right now. Neither of them are good.
There's very few of the Into the Dark ones.
You know which one? You know what one is fucking terrifying? It's not The Only Come at Night, but it's the one with the father and his kids in the trailer, where they're basically trapped in the trailer in the Southwest by these like weird Wendigo chupacabra things.
Nope, I haven't seen it.
Oh, dude, I'll remember the name of it. And
yeah,
tell you, but
let me know.
That's one of the only, and Pookie.
Pookie's good.
So anyway,
this is and this movie is written by Teresa Sutherland, who was one of the staff writers on Midnight
Mass.
And
I can see that pedigree.
I can see that tone represented in this movie for sure. It stars Caitlin Gerard as Lizzie, Julie Goldani Tellis as Emma, and Ashley Zuckerman as Isaac.
And that's all you need. It's just
all you need.
Three characters.
It's a very small cast because it's about a couple who lives in this house in the middle of like the most vast desert plain with just wind that never lets up.
They're frontier pioneers. And to give you an idea of how remote it is, when whichever one moves there at first and is talking to the other one, she's like, so how many people live here? And she was like, including you guys, four.
Yeah.
And it's like just the four of them in like 200 mile radius.
It's like nothing. And it's just constant wind, and nothingness. It's a super slow paced movie.
Yeah. So if you're not into that kind of pacing in films, I can almost promise you, you're going to hate this movie because there are entire scenes that is just a character sitting in a room, looking around weirdly, like, I know there's something happening, and, like, you hear the sound of the wind. And, like, that's there are multiple scenes of that. But they make sense if you're willing to, if you're willing to sit it out. Like, I think this movie is fucking incredible.
It's a really, definitely a nice movie. I got close to thinking it was almost too slow-paced, but I enjoyed the film no matter what.
It does the Coen Brothers thing where it'll ramp up for, like, and get hyper-violent for, like, 30 seconds.
And if we haven't been explicit about this already, we enjoy atmosphere.
Yeah.
And this movie is almost nothing but atmosphere. But don't let us talk you out of it, because there is absolutely plot involved. It's not just people staring at the wind for 2 hours.
But so one of the things that this movie kind of revolves around is something called prairie fever. And I looked this up. This is a real mania that affected people. And it makes sense. It's the same kind of mania that affects anyone that occupies a really remote space for long enough. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, you go stir crazy.
Yeah.
But prairie fever specifically almost always ended in homicidal violence. It almost always ended in someone like just brutally murdering someone else, like out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Or themselves. So like with that in mind, they definitely want to convince you that it's a demon. But there's always that question in this movie, is it just prairie fever?
But there are some times it definitely takes on some like dark and the wicked type
vibes. And that's what I mean when they definitely push you in the direction of this is a prairie demon.
Yes, for sure. Right. And you know, we can't prove that prairie fever ain't the result of
prairie
demons.
Well, here's the thing, is that anytime anything physical happens to any of the characters in this, they're always alone.
Yes, exactly. So it could arguably be just their mind playing tricks.
The story is not told linearly in any way.
Right.
Yeah, just watch it. We think you'll like it.
So up last, and certainly not least, on the list, 2018's Winchester.
So this is the other one on this list that I have found is very divisive among genre fans. People either, like, nobody casually likes this movie. People either love or fucking hate this movie.
And we were just talking about this a little bit. I thought I was going to hate this movie. And I've kind of put off watching this movie for a long time.
And I wouldn't have judged you if you had.
Because I thought this movie was just going to be boring, honestly.
Yeah.
This movie was a good reminder that we don't always need insane amounts of violence and fountains of gore for a horror movie to still be effective.
Again, atmosphere, man.
This movie's all atmosphere, but also a nice,
there's a little
pretty good plot.
There's a healthy sprinkling of like genuinely scary stuff.
Yes, there is. And it's a pretty top tier cast, too.
Yeah.
So looking at this movie, Winchester is directed by the Spierig brothers, who are identical twin directors who did Daybreakers,
which is a tremendously underrated film,
with Ethan Hawke, too, who I love, and Jigsaw, which is a movie as well. And it's written by the Spierig brothers and Tom Vaughn, and stars Helen Mirren as Sarah Winchester. Lady Helen Mirren. And Jason Clark as Dr. Eric Price. Jason Clark is a man I feel like
He's up there with Patrick Wilson in terms of he is a like a modern Vincent Price.
I like him. We don't really have... I feel like he doesn't get his respect for some reason.
Well, back in the day, like when Hammer was really big, mm-hmm. we had what I saw cleverly referred to the other day as Scream Kings. Mm-hmm. We had people like Peter Cushing. We had people like Vincent Price. We had people like Christopher Lee.
Yes.
The guy that plays Alfred in Tim Burton's Batman movies was, mm-hmm. I can't remember his name. He's also in Sleepy Hollow. He was another one of them. We don't really have that nowadays, but I think people like
Patrick Wilson
and Jason Clarke are these modern day Scream Kings.
Yeah, I feel like Jason Clarke does lead roles in movies that I just don't end up doing all that well. Like Chappaquiddick, which I actually thought was very good.
Is that the one where he plays Teddy?
Yes.
Teddy Kennedy?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I thought that was a really good movie. Didn't do well in theaters.
No.
Pet Sematary remake, I thought he was one of the only good things about that movie.
Yeah, he you know what? If they could have somehow magically transported mm-hmm. his portrayal mm-hmm. of Lewis Creed to Mary Lambert's version of Pet, that would have been... Because, all right, so I just watched Mary Lambert's Pet Sematary, like,
so good.
Yesterday.
So good.
My only beef with that film is that the guy that plays Lou Creed plays him too mean in that movie.
Yeah.
Lewis Creed definitely has a mean streak in him throughout that story, but I feel like Jason Clarke plays it much better, where it's like he's miserable as a result. He's not he's not like whoever the guy that plays him in 1989's version plays him as almost like sadistic and vindictive. After a certain point, Jason Clarke just gets more and more miserable as
and
Lewis
more
Creed.
Broken. Yeah,
yeah.
I love Jason Clarke,
and that's who I imagine Lewis. Because I also just finished listening to Pet Sematary mm-hmm. on Audible, and that's how I imagine Lewis from listening to the story from the book is that he's just miserable. He just makes a series of horrible mistakes for the best of reasons,
and can't go back because everything just
keeps
getting worse.
Yeah, and he can't undo any of it. Yeah, so he just leans into it.
Yeah.
This
movie also didn't do all that well in theaters. Yeah. So, like, you know, Jason Clarke led films, haven't had the best of luck, but he's still an actor who I really appreciate.
So let me give you guys, to start, a little bit of background on the Winchester house, who Sarah Winchester was, who her husband was. Sarah Winchester was the widow of the Winchester, the guy that invented the repeating rifle, mm-hmm. The weapon that was... basically seen as what won the Civil War, because the Union Army could afford these weapons, and the dude sold them specifically to them. So there's a lot of blood on his hands. So Sarah Winchester, in real life, after he passed away, felt that was the case, that all of the Confederate soldiers that had died mm-hmm. by this weapon that he had created, all of that blood was on her hands, and they had cursed her.
She felt all this guilt, and she felt she was haunted, and she had a medium in Boston, I believe, that she would go to, and this medium gave her the advice to move to the West Coast and to basically begin construction on this house.
On this house that was never going to be finished, that was just to be perpetually built to make more and more room for these spirits.
Yep.
Basically as like a... So you know in Ghostbusters when they're like, oh, this is the hub that all the spirits... Like, they accidentally built the hub that all the spirits... Yep. It's that.
Yeah.
But she did it knowingly.
But it's that mixed with the H.H. Holmes murder mansion.
Yeah.
Because it really did have, like, stairways that led to nothing, doorways to nowhere.
But to be clear, those stairways and doorways were not there to harm people. It was just...
It was there to, like, confuse and lose the spirits, basically. So she could wander... The movie goes a bit more explicit and like fictionalizes it in a way that she has like individual chambers.
Everything we've stated up until now is fact about her. The movie expounds upon that.
But it does a great way of like visually representing the house. In fact, the house does have like spider webs built into the architecture of windows, and 13 is a common repeating thing. And the movie is accurate about that, that 13 is not like meant as unlucky, it's meant as like a safety, spiritual protector.
And you can still tour that house today.
Yeah, it's still there.
So Jason Clarke plays Dr. Price, an opium-addicted man, mourning the death of his wife, and he's hired by the Winchester Arms Company to go to the Winchester widow's mansion and appraise her mental health. Because at this point... Everybody's talking, right? Number one, put it in context. This is a woman who in the late 19th century has her own fortune, has made her own money, inherited her husband's wealth as well, and is basically one of like the foremost wealthy people in the world. And she's not aided by any men everywhere. So the minute she does anything that's even remotely abnormal, they're like, oh, bitch is crazy. We should take her money.
Yeah. And then she does something that's way beyond remotely abnormal. And she does something that's just straight up weird and starts like constantly building a crazy house that's like a giant maze. So obviously the Winchester company's concerned and they send him out there. And he goes out there as a skeptic, and he, of course, over the course of this film, he learns that ghosts are very fucking real and that they're all over that damn mansion and that some of them are just plain angry.
Yeah, and, at some point he finds out that one of them is particularly angry and trying to kill Sarah. And from there on out, yeah, it does the formulaic thing where it's like, expel the ghost, everything's fine, look a rainbow.
Yeah, it turns Sarah Winchester into much more of like an active, like, medium and like ghost hunter, you know, that she ever was in reality.
Woman. Yeah, she was just a scared old lady with a lot of money in reality.
In the movies, she has like individual rooms she does this mediumship and she recreates the death rooms of these people exactly and then like locks them in there or helps them move on to the other.
Well, she recreates them exactly to lure the spirit into the room in the first place and then like locks the door with magic.
Or like helps them crossover, and none of this is stuff that she actually did.
And that's what I mean when I say that the movie expounds upon all this and Hollywoodizes it and makes a watchable narrative out of it. And I'd say that the third act is probably where I start not liking this movie as much. But I still don't hate it.
Yeah, me neither. I found this a really enjoyable watch, especially going into it with not very high expectations.
Well, and like we've already said, Jason Clarke is so good at playing traumatized.
Yeah.
And like realistically traumatized. Like I have to keep, my life has to continue somehow, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to be miserable.
And like I think the production design with the house and the fact that just Helen Mirren and Jason Clarke put on such great performances make the movie really, really good. Where like lesser actors, maybe this movie could have fallen a lot shorter.
And you got to figure Helen Mirren's not gonna attach herself to something that she thinks is beneath her.
100%.
She can do whatever the fuck she wants. She's like Anthony Hopkins, right? Like sometimes I think Anthony Hopkins chooses certain like latter day roles just because he's Anthony Hopkins and he's like, watch me do whatever I want.
The one thing this movie does do that's like kind of interesting and ties into some true history is at the end of this movie they get crazy with this ghost finale and it results in this giant earthquake,
which is true.
So there is a point at which there was a massive earthquake and Sarah Winchester was trapped inside a room in her own house for an extended amount of time, and she claims that she was tormented by a spirit in that time. So that element of the story is at least documented. And, they take that to the nth degree in the movie. But it's always kind of fun to see how they, connect the real events.
Yeah. I mean, I dug it. And, like we said, if you just want, like, a good, spooky, fairly well-paced, atmospheric, almost horror film that falls apart in the third act, give it a watch.
So this is our list of gothic haunting movies, and I think these movies are important to remind us that there's not one specific thing that makes a horror movie a horror movie. Whether you love excessive amounts of blood and decapitations, or creatures, or just spooky atmosphere, there's something out there that scares everybody, and it all has good nutritional value. None of the movies we've talked about today are bloodbath, horror, extravaganza movies, but I feel like, as horror fans, we need a good, healthy dose of atmosphere in our diet.
Well, and I got to give a shout out to Alison Crawford. I think she's really the one that got my mind, that kind of steered my mind this way. Because she texted me a couple weeks ago and asked me for recommendations for spooky but not overly scary or like super gory stuff. And it took me a minute. I had to rack my brain. But I gave her some of these as an example. And then I lent her 1963's The Haunting and 1953's The Thing from Another Planet. So thank you, Allison and Josh. Her partner, Josh, is the guy that was on our last Patreon. Thank the both of you for putting my mind in that direction.
Yeah. And this is like, this is perfect watching material for spooky season and the Halloween season, especially as we gear up into it.
Agreed.
There's still plenty of time rest in the rest of the month to watch the movies full of buckets of blood, and we'll get there.
Yeah.
But for now, we salute these gothic horror haunting movies, And we are thankful for you guys to keep with us all October. If you guys want some more, head over to campnightmare.com. Go to the X-Files section. You can get tickets to the Distorted Dreams Haunt, which is tomorrow night, Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
Where we're hanging out with Nancy Ann Ritter. And if you guys want even more camp, head over to patreon.com/campnightmare.
Slash.
And that's where you can get all kinds of amazing stuff, like the pre-orders for the merit badges that are up right now. And that's also where you can get exclusive episodes like our recent watch-along with our buddy Josh, where we watched The Sword and the Dragon. That was actually just Russian propaganda dressed up as a fantasy film.
Steve!
Hail Steve!
Steve!
And also this month, we're going to have a very special Patreon episode where we break down H.P. Lovecraft's From Beyond. We're going to do a dramatic read of the story and compare the original Lovecraft story to the Stuart Gordon movie adaptation.
Here's what you need to know ahead of time. There is no such thing as too far for Stuart Gordon.
No, or nor for us.
Nor for us.
All that stuff's only at Patreon.
Huge shout out and a welcome back for their second time in a row as our sponsor, Wonder Book and Video, wonderbk.com. For all of your book, DVD, Blu-ray, cassette tape, CD, and vinyl needs.
If you're in the DMV area, maybe you can visit in person. If not, just go online and you can browse their digital catalogs and find all kinds of amazing stuff.
That does it, guys. As always, my name is JB.
And I'm Jordan.
Nothing is real.
And don't tell us what to do.
Thanks for listening to Camp Nightmare. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Slasher. And for full campfire tales, interviews, X-Files, and more, visit campnightmare.com.
And join our Patreon community of happy campers for monthly secret episodes, exclusive merch deals, B-movie watch-alongs, access to our Discord channel, and more. Visit patreon.com/campnightmare.